Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Google Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the rainy day of free speech because you're looking out the window and it's raining, but you'd like to go out there and, you know, maybe play in the sandbox or on the swing set. Maybe the weather will clear. In the meantime, send fundage, badly needed fundage to RBN. You can do it by going to Republic Broadcasting Network. They need a rainy day fund. Actually, they need an air conditioner. So send fundage to republicbroadcasting.org. You'll find all the information at the site, republicbroadcasting.org. Okay, today is our Monday show. We have with us Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's great to be here. A wonderful start to the week, as always.
Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is. So something caught my eye immediately before we connected today, and somebody sent me, I don't know, is it a tweet? I don't know. I don't know these things. But from Kim.com. Now, I don't know Kim.com. It's just so Kim.com is a pretty memorable name. I know it's some computer tech guy who's relatively well known in parts of the tubes. And Kim.com apparently is claiming that Liz Truss, who for a blink of an eye was
44 days, I think, Patrick.
44 days was the Prime Minister of Britain. But during those 44 days, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline was sabotaged and bombed. And was Nord Stream 1 also sabotaged and bombed at the same time?
I believe it was. I believe both were done. So I don't think it was just the one.
Right, and there have been claims that it was actually the British Navy that did it.
Yep.
But this claim from Kim.com is that Liz Truss, then Prime Minister Liz Truss, sent a text message immediately after the explosion, sent a text message to Antony Blinken saying, "It's done." Wow. Well, I mean, I have no idea how to assess this, so I'm not claiming that this actually happened, but there actually is this, rumor floating around. So I kick it over to you, Mark. What do you make of it?
I think it's, perfectly reasonable to assume that could be the case. I don't understand why anyone would think it wouldn't be reasonable. I think that Britain is a vassal state of America, probably America's most useful vassal state, certainly the one that is the most eager to embroil itself in American wars, or to actually get out there and sort of fight on behalf of America, or to get involved in foreign interventions along with America. We saw that obviously with the war in Iraq. We saw that with the war in Afghanistan. And this isn't something that's sort of a big secret. This isn't something that people would be like, "Oh yeah, I'm not sure about that." This is something that people pretty much, would be all agreed upon. And it's also been the case that Britain has been the other country that has been desperate to follow America into wars that America has not been able to get into. So a good example of a war that America wasn't able to get into was the war in Syria. America at one point was desperate to get involved in the war in Syria, was absolutely desperate to have boots on the ground. They clearly wanted this to be sort of, their next big incursion into the Middle East. Now, thankfully, that never actually happened. But Britain was equally committed to that eventuality. And you may or you may not have seen, but that went before the House of Commons. I mean, thankfully, it didn't occur. Thankfully, that that was something that didn't take place. But it wasn't for want of trying. I believe it was David Cameron who was pushing for that. And he really wanted that to be his war in the same way that Blair's war was the war in Iraq. And it never came to that, thankfully, which mm-hmm. is obviously a wonderful thing, because we're not warmongers. But I would definitely say, if anybody was to do a job like that for America, you'd have to say it'd be Britain.
So, you know, there was the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, right? And the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion describe all sorts of plans that the Jewish community had for the world. And retrospectively, some of those plans seem to have transpired. Now, we hear often that the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion was a forgery, because it seems that they were in fact written by maybe somebody in the Tsar's secret police or something like that, rather than by the secretary at a meeting of actual, you know, old Jewish men, right? And therefore it's all a forgery that becomes the talking point. Whereas what's really significant about the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion isn't so much the authorship, who actually wrote it. What is significant is that somebody in the late 1890s looked at Jewish power, whether they were within Jewish power, whether they were pro-Jewish power, or whether they were anti-Jewish power, looked at it and said, yeah, this is the direction they're going to try to go in, and got a fair amount correct. That's what's significant. And so the same way, here's something, and I'm not trying to go 3D chess or 4D chess or 5D chess or whatever, but we had just heard, and, you know, I'm not even sure if – I don't remember the source – but we had heard that it was the British Navy that actually carried out the bombing of the Nord Stream 2, right? We'd heard that. I don't remember exactly what the source of that was. But here's the thing. It wasn't really widely spread. And if you're on the side of anti-Russian schemers, if you're on the side of blowing up the pipeline, if you sympathize with those people and it seems like they're going to get caught, well, what could you do? One thing you could do is put out news of a fake tweet, that's not what's being alleged, but falsely put out a report of a text message from Liz Truss to Anthony Blinken. And then when that text message from Trust the Blinken is somehow disproven, then you can say, look, that whole story about the British Navy having done this is fake news. Whereas, you know, really just the text message might be fake news, but but what was being alleged by the text message could be totally true. You see what I mean? So regardless of all that, the main thing isn't whether or not Liz Trust texted Anthony Blinken. The main thing is whether or not the British Navy or any other part of what people are calling the collective West, if they actually destroyed the pipeline, which is a certainty. I mean, there's no other plausible scenario where these explosions would have taken place. So, right? I mean, any comments on that?
I've got to say, I obviously believed from the very start that this was the workings of the American state. However, I also believed that fundamentally it was very, very likely that other people could have been involved. Now, something I spoke about on one show at the time of this was that I believed that it might well have had something to do with the Ukrainian state. The Ukrainian Special Forces could have done something like this at America's behest. So just because the American state is calling the plays, it doesn't mean it's necessarily the American state that is making those plays, or American troops making those plays. It doesn't follow. The two aren't intrinsically connected, because America actually has so many of these vassal states. America is in a situation where they are so powerful in terms of what they control, the other countries that are doing their bidding, you know, Britain, Germany, and Japan probably being the three most notable vassal states. I think it's very reasonable to think that one of them could have done it. And it does stand to even more reason that fundamentally Britain would do such a thing, because Britain is obviously a naval power. British nuclear submarines are obviously controlled by America. For people who don't know, the British nuclear weapons platform is an American nuclear weapons platform, and that American nuclear weapons platform is not there for Britain. It is there for America, and although it's meant to be, you know, a British nuclear weapons platform, you know, you can be assured that the final control over that platform is held by the American state. So taking all of that into account and understanding everything we've just said, it makes perfect sense for Britain to be involved. If you think of America a little bit like the mafia, and you're thinking of America in those terms, it actually stands to reason that it wouldn't be the boss that does the hit themselves. So America is the head of this Western mafia. They're not going to go out on the street and pull the trigger. One of their lackeys is going to do that. And Britain is a lackey of America. It's a vassal state. So, you know, when there's a job that needs doing, it absolutely does make sense that Britain may be the state carrying out that job. And it also makes absolute sense that, especially where this would be, that Britain would have very, very easy access to Nord Stream. And somebody like Liz Truss would 100% be involved with this, because just as David Cameron was desperate to get involved in the war in Syria, you would have leading conservative ministers willing to get involved in the war in the Ukraine, just as Johnson was desperate to be travelling over there. I mean, things were falling to pieces for Johnson here in the UK. Things were falling to pieces for the Conservative Party itself on an electoral level. But Johnson was more interested in travelling to the Ukraine than he was in actually helping the Conservative Party rebuild its electoral base. You know, the Conservative Party were losing key by-elections, and he was supposedly in the Ukraine shaking hands with Zelensky. Now, he was shaking hands with Zelensky, whether in the Ukraine or not, it's a different thing. But, yeah, I would believe this. I would believe this. I think a lot of people will believe this. And I think that it's another stain on an already heavily stained Conservative Party government.
Okay. Now, I mean, that all sounds extremely reasonable, extremely likely. And obviously it was either the United States government, military, the American state, or one of its underlings that carried this out. I mean, there's no plausible scenario whereby Russia attacked its own pipelines. I think that's clear. By the way, earlier you mentioned Syria, and you know, you said the American state desperately wanted war in Syria. And you know, right now when we're talking about the American state and the Nord Stream pipeline, right now you've got the American state, the foreign policy of the American state is firmly in the hands of Jewish power. You've got the nominal head of government is senile, and he's clearly not in charge of anything. That's not even a controversial statement. The State Department, you know, the top three people are Jews, and they're focused very much on this project to regime change Vladimir Putin. That, I think that, you know, that's just kind of open and shut. There, you know, typically the Defense Department's also involved in foreign policy. But, you know, right now, I think you can tell from the appointment of Lloyd Harumbi, I mean, sorry, Lloyd Austin as Secretary of Defense, that at least the top leadership at the Pentagon is more engaged in purging the American military of patriotic white heterosexual men, as opposed to foreign policy. So I think it's pretty obvious that foreign policy is in the hands of the Jewish State Department and not the Pentagon right now. Now, as for Syria, there are absolutely elements in the American state that wanted to get involved in Syria. But I think at that time, the pro-involvement in Syria faction didn't have quite the domination that they do now. And I think, Barack Obama, who I'm not a shill for Obama, but I think Obama himself, who was not senile and had at least a certain amount of engagement, I don't think he was particularly gung-ho on full-scale boots on the ground American intervention in Syria and maybe others in the administration. And really, I'm just throwing that out there. So you can talk about the American state sometimes, like the state is you can think of it as an entity, and that's a perfectly fine way of thinking of it. But at the end of the day, if you want to think like a little bit more, more complicated way, it's an entity that's made up of individuals, and not all of whom have the same agenda. And so in that case, again, I just point out that there was not the same unanimity amongst the people who matter in the American state regarding Syria, say, 6, 7, 8 years ago, as there is today. There is unanimity amongst the people who matter regarding the Russia policy now. So I'm just kind of throwing that out there. Any comments on that before we move on to another topic?
No, not really. I mean, I understand what you're saying. The American state now is a much more united body under Biden. And obviously, I think the big change here that you're actually seeing is that fundamentally, the war in the Ukraine, it's not going to be as immediately unpopular either. So there's not going to be American boots upon the ground. Obviously there is going to be, at some point, there would be plenty of money sent there. There would be plenty of resources sent there. That is obviously to the benefit of the American industrial military complex, as we know. But I don't think you'd be seeing boots on the ground. Whereas in Syria, it was the Americans doing the fighting. Whereas in the Ukraine, it's not the Americans doing the fighting, is it? The people doing the fighting in the Ukraine are Ukrainian. And I think that does make a huge difference in terms of, the popularity of a conflict. Because fundamentally, you and I both know that any conflict that involves actual American troops is going to see a certain portion of those American troops return home dead or gravely wounded. And I believe that if that was the case now, I still think there would be opposition to that. I think there'd be unpopularity, yeah. And there'd be people who were concerned that for a president that they need to prop up, it'd be a very bad look.
Don't ever look at the prices of area. look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. That's what I try to provide you with after 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Chef Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Catamaran Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at CatamaranLTV@Cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214. Or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. I'm glad to help you out. I'm glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure. Just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. Patricia, excellent thermal point. I use Extendivite to keep my cardiovascular system fine tuned. Brian, I'm using Extendivite, and for me, it has made a world of difference. God made all these nutrients in the ground. Tammy, 5 stars. I feel a lot of energy since I started taking Extendivite. All I can say is, Extendivite works. Buy it, try it, and see for yourself. To get your Extendivite, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Think there would be opposition to that. I think there'd be unpopularity, yeah. And there'd be people who were concerned that for a president that they need to prop up, it would be a very bad look. So Biden's already incredibly unpopular. Incredibly unpopular. However, if he was to say, right, that's it, we've got American boots on the ground in a hot America-Russia conflict, I think there'd be a lot of people saying, look, we've had enough. Grandad has at best been mildly amusing. At worst, he's been a complete embarrassment. But now Grandad's got his hands on sort of the nuclear button and he's taking us closer to 12 o'clock on the doomsday clock. So, you know, maybe it's time for Grandad to go. And I think there'd be a massive, massive switch in voting habits should he do that, especially at a time when normal Americans are probably seeing the greatest reduction in their quality of life and their income that they've seen, you know, arguably, you know, in living memory, you know, if not in living memory since maybe, I mean, is the Great Depression a living memory? Yeah, because there's going to be people.
There are a few people.
Yeah, there'll be a few people. So,
there are a few people out there.
It's probably not the greatest, you know, financial depression in living memory, but it's getting close to that. And as it gets close to, certainly, it's the greatest financial problems we've had in recent memory. And as we get, and as we get sort of, as it gets worse, I think people will be saying, well, you know, money should be better spent here in America on American issues and American people. I definitely think that will be happening. But what would really, really compound that is if all of a sudden somebody said, yeah, and we're going to be sending American soldiers there to die. I think at that point, the balloon really would go up and you would see a lot of people turn against Biden to the point where you might even see levels of unpopularity that led, I'm not saying to a revolutionary situation, but to a point where Congress would potentially have powers to act, whether it be some form of impeachment or something else. I do think there would be serious calls for him to resign or step down.
Right. Hey! Sorry. He and dogs these days. Anyway, there's, you know, I want to backtrack a little bit on my previous statement. When comparing the American policy in Syria and the American policy in Ukraine, actually, you know, there is a similarity in that, it, you know, in both cases, as you pointed out, there's not American boots on the ground. I mean, in Syria, not in any significant way, and there might be some insignificant American boots on the ground right now in Ukraine, insignificant, but not in a serious way, not in either case. And then, you know, they were being carried out by proxies funded by the American government. Now, perhaps the main difference is that the proxy doing the fighting in Ukraine is itself a state actor, and Ukraine is a state with a large population, and it had a large standing military going into this, whereas the proxies that were being used in Syria were not really state actors. You had, you know, ISIS and Al-Qaeda and, you know, these other groups. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. So, shifting gears, now you've got in Britain for the past week, you've got this new this new cabinet under Rishi Sunak. And, you know, there are those who say that this effectively was some sort of globalist coup. Not that you or I probably have much sympathy for Liz Truss, but who's in charge in Britain? What are we to make of the new Rishi Sunak cabinet? Please enlighten us.
Well, I think the first thing to say is obviously nobody voted for this man. Nobody voted for Rishi Sunak. He's not a guy that people actually wanted. I think that's very, very important. You've got to remember, Liz Truss beat him in a vote the Conservative Party membership took part in. She defeated him in this vote, and
it wasn't even close.
It wasn't particularly close, no. She defeated him in this vote, and the vote was, she won it with 57.4% of the vote. So, you know, it was roughly a 60-40 split. Now, people argue that she was an unelected prime minister because she was never elected as prime minister. No one ever voted for her during a general election to lead the country. They voted for Boris Johnson. But somebody did vote for her. Somebody did actually vote for Truss. And the people who voted for Truss were the Conservative Party membership. They elected a leader, and that leader was her. Whether we like it or not, you know, that's the...
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their head whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Are you sick of censorship?
PLB Talk is the cure. PLB stands for truth, liberty, and balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform that hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, PLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. PLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off the generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at dldtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Homeowners, if your lender has not outed the use of social transactions to another lender or services, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction and the property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed, and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws and rules from both the U.S. Supreme Court rulings upheld that defective mortgage documentation can reverse the foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the home. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure. The enforcement of the foreclosure judgments and the sale of property and evictions of the same. We are not attorneys.
There will be no more from now on.
We are professional legal researchers providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce evidence and enforce laws regarding legal issues. We've been in business with builders of the land. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm your mortgage has any defects. Please call 855-255-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let's sing a song of cheer again.
But somebody did vote for it. Somebody did actually vote for Truss. And the people who voted for Truss were the Conservative Party membership. They elected a leader, and that leader was hurt, whether we like it or not. You know, that's the that is the situation. They elected her as a leader, and fundamentally, you know, they had a say on it. However, absolutely nobody has elected Rishi Sunak. In fact, when you look at the situation with Sunak, what you're actually seeing is a situation, you know, is a situation where the parliamentary party, as in the parliamentary Conservative Party, they wanted Sunak. They didn't want Truss. They wanted Sunak. And they didn't get it. And I don't like Liz Truss. I think she's a vile, horrible, harpy of a woman. But whether I like her or not is largely irrelevant, because Liz Truss did have some degree of a mandate. Not much of a mandate, but some degree of a mandate. And the mandate that Truss had was that the Conservative Party had elected her. But Sunak was not elected by the Conservative Party. He was effectively appointed by the Parliamentary Party. And the interesting thing is, other people stepped forward and said, well, look, let's have a proper leadership contest. And all of those people were forced out. So there wasn't a contest. Boris Johnson wanted to stand again. He never stood. And Penny Mordaunt wanted to stand. And the Conservative press also got involved in this and were saying, like, oh, you know, this is madness. You know, somebody needs to speak to Penny Mordaunt. There's no... And again, I'm not a fan of Penny Mordaunt. But the Conservative Party faithful were not given an option. The public haven't been given an option. This is something that's being imposed on the public by the Conservative Party as a parliamentary party. And the Conservative Party as a parliamentary party are fundamentally anti-white. They've broken every election promise they've made. They flip-flop on things constantly. And they haven't done... They haven't made good on their key promises. And that's the thing, 'cause you can break some promises. Look, when you get elected, sometimes you don't fulfill the things that you wanted to fulfill. And that doesn't necessarily make you a bad person. It doesn't necessarily make you a liar. So, for example, Trump never built the wall. But I don't think Trump failed to build the wall because he didn't want to build the wall. Trump failed to build the wall because he was held back at every level by vicious anti-whites that were intentionally holding him back and preventing him from making good on his promise. Now, the interesting thing here is that wasn't the case for the Conservative Party here in the UK. The Conservative Party didn't fail to get a grip of mass immigration because they were held back or because people were clipping their wings. The Conservative Party in the UK failed to get a grip of mass immigration because fundamentally the Conservative Party didn't want to get a grip of it. Now, the Conservative Party, when they came to power, they were in a position where they had this incredible mandate, where they were in a position where, thanks to Boris Johnson, they had an 80-seat majority. And when you have an 80-seat majority in Parliament, I'm not saying you can do what you want. You know, you can't run riot and just come up with nonsense. But you do have enough of a majority to push through changes that you were elected to push through. And they have absolutely failed on every level to do that. And I believe they failed on every level to do that because everything they said pre this election was one gigantic lie. They've lied to the public. They've let everybody down. They know they've done that. And they continue to lie to the public. So this isn't something where they fundamentally told a few little fibs and they're going to sort it out. This has been the central backbone of their election. It's been that one of their central campaign was built around this idea that mass immigration was out of control and that we were going to get this wonderful points-based immigration system. But not only have we not got a points, well, we have got a point-based immigration system, but the points are basically zero. So it just means anyone can come in. And that's been a massive, massive disappointment for people. I think people have been, are disgusted by this. And it just goes to show that the parliamentary Conservative Party as a whole, it's not just one prime minister either. You could say, well, it's a rogue prime minister. You know, Johnson's a rogue guy or Cameron's a rogue guy. But you've had five different prime ministers in 6 years, and every single one of these prime ministers has failed to fundamentally get a grip of mass immigration. And I don't believe any of that has been because they've been, held up in Parliament or anything for it, because that would be a strange thing to say, wouldn't it? It'd be strange to say that they're held up in Parliament when they've got a massive majority. It's not like Trump. Now, Trump, I keep bringing up Trump, but he was held back repeatedly because fundamentally he didn't have the support he needed to actually push through his changes. But the Conservative Party absolutely does, yet it absolutely isn't bringing about the changes it was elected to bring about. And you've got to draw inference from that, that this party is completely, is not bothered in the slightest about what the public desires. They do not care. They're not interested. They're not bothered. It doesn't matter to them. They're so out of touch with, the public that they will blatantly, nakedly make pledges that they have no desire whatsoever to keep.
Right. So, and you made the comparison between, say, Trump, who, there's going to be people out there who are going to say, well, he was part of the plan always, but, you know, at least on the surface, it certainly seemed like he wanted to do something about immigration, build a wall, change laws, and he was thwarted. And, you know, that is in contrast to the situation in Britain. And, you know, what people need to realize, because Americans, a lot of Americans aren't that familiar with the parliamentary system. Boris Johnson or Theresa May or Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss, they are members of parliament themselves. They are members of parliament. And in fact, the way you become the prime minister in Britain is not by being elected independently by the British people, but it is by being the leader of the largest faction in parliament. And so it's not just that, Boris Johnson might have been popular amongst the electorate, but that he was the leader of the largest faction in parliament. Now, in the United States, the election of the president is completely independent from the election of Congress. The president is not a member of Congress. He's elected in a completely separate election. You can have elections like in 1972, for instance, where Richard Nixon had a massive landslide, and yet in the same year, the election for the House of Representatives and the Senate returned very large majorities for the Democrats, for the opposite party. They're completely independent elections. And in the case of Trump, well, obviously within the so-called deep state, within the bureaucracy, there are forces that were against him. And that might be the case to a certain extent in Britain. I don't know. I've watched Yes, Prime Minister, and it seemed like, 90% of the time, Lord Humphreys was getting his way with the hapless prime minister. But in the United States, it wasn't just the deep state. It was the Republicans in Congress. Trump did not have his own political party. He didn't. He was practically persona non grata within the Republican Party. And you had the Republican leaders like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan who were actively working against his agenda, actively. Which, that doesn't seem to be the, I don't know, think you could say the same for Britain. So I'm just bringing that up. You remember Lord Humphreys, right?
What? No.
No?
I do know what you mean about, that's exactly the point you were saying there, is in agreement with what I'm saying, that, really Johnson and the Conservatives in Britain had what they needed to make change. They had a mandate from the people, and they had the correct the correct sort of level of power within the political structure to actually do something, to actually make a change, to talking about allowing in millions more of his fellow Indians. He's already talking about this idea of bringing in more people from abroad to fill job vacancies. And obviously, again, that is something the British people did not desire. They made it clear that they did not desire that. They made it clear that instead they wanted sort of Britain for the British. They wanted an end to immigration. They wanted British jobs for British workers. And that is how the Conservative Party broke down what is known as the Red Wall. And the Red Wall is a traditional voting bloc that always vote for the Labour Party. My dad voted Labour, his dad voted for Labour, his dad voted for Labour, and I'm going to vote Labour until I die. That was the kind of message you got from Red Wall areas. And all of a sudden, the Red Wall had been broken down. Boris had smashed the Red Wall. And we were in a position where people had said, I am willing to break with potentially decades or even centuries of voting tradition in order to basically bring about change when it comes to mass immigration. And that's a big thing, isn't it? That's a big thing. People thought Boris Johnson wasn't some out of touch, blowhard Tory. They thought Boris was a guy that could fundamentally be trusted. They thought Boris was a guy who was going to deliver that change on big issues such as mass immigration. And, as soon as Johnson got in, did we see any of those changes? No, we saw the exact opposite of those changes. And because of that, what are we faced with now, Patrick? Well, we're faced with a situation where the Conservative Party is in absolute turmoil. The nation is in absolute turmoil. And normal people are turning against the Conservative Party in droves. And unfortunately, and this is the unfortunate part, because everything I've said there is, you know, in some way good news. You know, people are finally waking up. People are saying, right, we need to turn against the establishment. People want to vote this government out of power because they're so disgusted at what they see going on. But who are they going to vote for? Well, they're going to vote Labour. And when they vote Labour, what are they going to get? Well, they're going to get more of the same, but on steroids. And that is the great unfortunate truth of all of this, that fundamentally people will obviously vote for somebody different, but what are they going to get? They are going to get more anti-whiteism. They are going to get a party which is just as happy to plunge Britain into a series of foreign conflicts. They're going to get a party that is pro-trans, pro-LGBT, and all that other madness. And ultimately, this underlines exactly why this anti-white oligarchy is such a terrible, terrible thing. Because even when people want to vote their way out of it, they can't, because they're presented with two options. And the two options that they are presented with are not, in fact, different, but are just recolorings of, you know, the same thing. So, you know, you vote for anti-whiteism with a red tie, or you vote for anti-whiteism and internationalism with a blue tie. So which are you going to vote for? Ultimately, if you want to be, if you want to be really on the nose about it, you might as well vote based on what your favourite colour tie is, because what you're getting, you know, isn't going to be any different. So who do you want to see? A guy standing there for 5 years in a red tie, or a guy standing there for 5 years in a blue tie? Because it doesn't matter which you have, the blue tie man and the red tie man, they're going to give you exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, for instance, American politics. So much of American politics is really on the level of high school football, where Western High sucks, Central High rules. It's basically on that level. Now, we're going to have a big election here in 8 days, and it's almost certain that you're going to have the House of Representatives with a very substantial Republican majority. And probably at this point, certainly the Las Vegas betting odds are that the Republicans, are likely to capture a slim majority in the Senate. You know, and what does all that mean? And, you know, you look at the, well, 6 years ago when Trump won the election, he won the presidency, but, he had virtually no allies in Congress. Out of I think there are 53 Republican senators at the time, only one had endorsed him during the primaries. Only one out of over 50 had endorsed him. And, you know, so he didn't have allies in Congress. The Congress that's about to be elected will have at least dozens of nominally MAGA Republicans. But I say nominally MAGA, what does it even mean to be Republican? And I look at some of these people who are running with Trump's endorsement as MAGA Republicans. And, you know, there are some who are pretty much in tune with Trump 2016. But there is a whole lot who are more kind of Fox News, kosher MAGA, to whom America First means standing up against Iran, because Iran is threatening Israel. And that's, you know, you're just getting right back to where you started from. I will welcome the Republicans taking control of the Congress. I will welcome it, but I don't have any expectations for them to do a whole lot that's important. It's just that they're going to take up space that otherwise would be filled by people who might be more effective or more dedicated to working against our interests. So I'm just bringing that up. I don't know if you have any thoughts about the American elections coming up.
I don't really, because it's a very different system. And I will say this. I think, obviously, here in the UK, the Conservative Party is absolutely controlled. It's controlled centrally. It's impossible to get on a Conservative Party ballot if you are anything other than a centrally approved, you know, stooge. However, I do believe in America that there is something positive about your political system, in the sense that there are outlying or outliers in positions of maybe not supreme, but they are the next.
Way down on the levee in old Alabama, there's Daddy Biden and Mammy, there's Ephraim and Sam.
Serapine with today's Liberty Minute. Yesterday, Biden announced pardons for citizens convicted federally of possession of marijuana or convicted in Washington, D.C. Pardons do not apply to any other offense or to non-citizens. Biden also urged governors to do the same in their state. This mass pardon event might be a political stunt, something of an October surprise, but it also might be the best thing Biden has done. This is a prison release that I can actually get behind. I don't think anyone should be in prison for a nonviolent, victimless crime. Although an administration official said that there was currently nobody in federal prison solely for possession of marijuana, I'm sure the 6,500 people with federal convictions on the record appreciate pardon. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Gangnam Style. In the sense that there are outlying or outliers in positions of maybe not supreme power, but they are elected. And if you had a huge change in mindset in America, people who were Republicans could represent that through the Republican Party. And as such, I believe that makes the Republican Party a vehicle that could be taken over. It's a vehicle that could be reformed, whereas there is no chance of that reformation in the Conservative Party in the UK. So obviously, I'm not a fan of the Republican Party, but I do think, because of the quirk of your system, that there is something that could be done with the Republican Party. So, for example, if the National Justice Party started doing exceptionally well, or America First started doing exceptionally well, or some other group popped out of somewhere and were like, right, we've got a huge block of public support, you could say, right, here is your Republican Party candidate that is endorsed by, you know, Mike Enoch and the National Justice Party, or here's your Republican Party candidate that's endorsed by Nick Fuentes and America First, you know, and that actually could be a thing, couldn't it? And I do think that's important. I think that's important to note, and it gives you guys at least some way to get representation in, you know, a major body, a major elected body. And I don't think every single Republican has been absolutely terrible. I'll give you an example of one. I think there's one called Lauren. Is it Lauren Brobart?
Yes, in Colorado, she's a congresswoman. Yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, she's a pretty attractive girl. She comes out with stuff which is, you know, interesting. She pushes back against the system on numerous different issues. And I'm not saying that she's one of us or that she's wonderful, but it does show there is some wriggle room, whereas you wouldn't get that in the Conservative Party in the UK. There's no wriggle room for any of that. So, as I say, I do think the Republican Party at some point could be taken over and reformed, which is something you wouldn't have in any European democracy.
Well, in most states, the primary elections, the process for selecting candidates for the general election is not actually run by the party. It's run by the state in public elections. And so the role of the party, the importance of parties in the United States, is just much, much smaller and less significant than in Britain. But, you know, we're up at the end of our time. So I want to thank you so much for joining me, Mark.
Thank you for having me on.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
It's not true. You say I've been in prison, you say I've got a wife, you say I can't help doing everything throughout my life. It's not true, it's not true, I'm telling you, cause I'm a near unaware. It's not true, Somerville. I haven't got 11 kids, I was born in Baghdad. Chinese, I have a lie, I didn't kill my dad. It's not true, it's not true, I'm telling you, but I'm up here and you're unaware. It's not true, so well. If the airborne rumors, you can just forget them too. Fools start the rumors, and none of them are true.
Hey there, are you gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop and lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop and lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth. Truth, truth.